Okay, welcome back. It's been an unusual hour, as they always are, when Acharya S. joins us. Acharya is a world-renowned and quite controversial, classically trained scholar of organized religion and reality. She, of course, is a proponent that all of humankind has a right to be born and to live on this planet without existing or being entrapped within the bonds and boundaries of organized religions, among other things. She has talked at great length about the negativity of organized religion, the deaths, destruction, and horrendous injuries inflicted upon our species and our planet over the millennia, and she continues to do so in her latest scholarly book called Christ in Egypt, The Horus-Jesus Connection is Here, also known as D.M. Murdoch. We know her as Acharya S. Welcome back to the program, young lady.
Well, thank you for having me. That was nicely put. I appreciate that.
Well, you're welcome. It's always easy to speak. Yeah, it's easy to speak the truth.
I appreciate it. Very
all right.
Nice to be here.
Now, if you look in the guests section at rents.com, you'll see Acharya's name. Right under her name is the title, Has Zeitgeist's Religion Part Been Refuted? Now, if you click on that, you'll go to her page and you can see the YouTube video, which features Acharya talking about the very controversial and spectacularly popular three-part film. It's one film, but it's in three parts, called Zeitgeist. And she really brings another dimension to the whole experience with her presentation. The second link under her name has to do with her book called Christ in Egypt. Again, the Horus-Jesus connection is here. All right. I'm going to let you step into this, and I'll follow along. There's a lot to talk about. We see constant examples of organized religion, again, doing what it does best, and that's create misery on the planet.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, and that's where I do like to start the program sometimes, because I want to impart that I'm not just, you know, jumping, doing all this work for some peculiar reason. It has my motivation has always been that the misunderstanding of religious ideology has caused tremendous suffering on the planet, and it continues to do so. And we're looking at, if we even, you know, survive long enough with all the other issues that we have, we're looking at a massive destruction created by especially two factions, massive, you know, the two huge factions right now are Christianity and Islam, and they are trying to create the Armageddon, the apocalypse, end times, precipitating the second coming of either Christ or the 12th Imam, the Mahdi in the Islamic...
Interesting how both of these organized religions are being manipulated, probed, prodded, and poked by a very small minority group of very wealthy and powerful people on the planet.
Yeah, well, that will happen. That, in fact, if you go back far enough to the origins of these religions, we find this they contrived for this very reason of controlling large amounts of people.
Control mechanism, of course.
Yeah, because what they've done is taken, and this is building up over a period of thousands of years. It isn't just that this suddenly a cabal of people came up with these ideas. This, if you go and you study the priesthood and what is known as priestcraft dating back thousands of years, you see a pattern that has been well-honed. And the latest creations, of course, the most prevalent ones that are the major religions right now are Islam and Christianity, those the last 1,400 and 2,000 years or so, that these were deliberately contrived, built on the other preceding religions for specific purpose of controlling a large section of the populace. And so what I'm trying to expose is the roots of these organized religions, that they're not built on nothing, or that they were divinely appointed by a messianic figure. Neither of those propositions turns out to be true. That these are not, holy writ on high coming down to the earth. That is what, of course, the believers in the religion this believe, but then they believe that the other person's religion is not. So, you know,
well, my club is better than your club. Now,
yeah,
what is
God
it? What is it about religion that is so irresistible to so many people? Are they that truly afraid of the unknown, and religions claim to give them answers, and that's all it takes?
Yes, a combination of things. I mean, one thing is certainly spiritual terrorism, and that starts as a child. You've got to get the kid young and start pounding this stuff into their brains that they're going to get punished by a giant bogeyman in the sky. And
forever.
They're going to be put into hell if they don't behave in a certain way forever. That's right. And it's a serious psychological abuse. I think that people who are not raised under that system, frankly, are healthier. I think it shows. It's you don't torture a child with this psychological abuse. And I was not tormented with this stuff. I was raised in a very mild Protestant, in other words, Christian family and environment. And none of this stuff was pounded into my head that I need to feel guilty about just being on Earth. Mm-hmm. Just being born, you know, born in sin.
Isn't that interesting? You're right. Yeah, that's part of the game. Yep.
You have to create the illness in order to provide the cure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there's no illness. If you have a different perspective of reality, which to its credit, some of the Eastern perspectives, and they're not flawless, there's plenty of problems with them, but let's say Buddhism, does not state that the child is born in sin. The child is born with the potential to become a Buddha. So then the child is not raised to feel like, well, I'm just by my very existence, I'm gross, I'm wretched. And not having that psychosis or that neurosis means you're not unhealthy enough to need a savior. You don't need to have someone tell you that God loves you. You know, no one else does, but Jesus loves you, or God does. You're really an awful, horrible creature. You're a born in sin wretch, but at least God loves you. And then you have to ask yourself, well, why the heck would God create these horrible, gross, born in sin wretches? And it's just a pathology that feeds on itself.
It does feed on itself. It amazes me. The whole idea of a belief system which becomes the central driving core of an otherwise sentient being still bothers me. We are taught not to question. We're taught to obey. That's the big game, of course. And our young people now, more than ever, are being conditioned, programmed, and absolutely given the software for life to be reactive people. They're not proactive. They're reactionary. They react to stimuli, to advertising media, to peer pressure. And then if they don't play ball, they're usually given pharmaceutical products to help them.
Our water is now filled with these products.
Of course it is. All it is, sure.
And you have to wonder that that's not just accidental by people going into the bathroom, but it's also contrived.
Everything from estrogen to SSRIs to aspartame can be found in the waters downstream from any city, downriver, downstream, in the oceans and the lakes. It doesn't matter where they put their filthy sewage, that's where it ends up. And it is destroying the planet.
See, we have so many issues coming down the pike, and we really don't need to add to it this idea of Armageddon with nuclear war and people, you know, nuking each other because they don't believe in the same God and their cult is superior to someone else's cult. This is one of the things that drove me. I had this strong environmental background that I wanted not to be destroying the planet, even as a small child. And then I realized I kept butting my head against people who were claiming that this was back in the James Watt day, the Secretary of the Interior who under Reagan, who was saying that, oh, well, we could destroy the planet and use up all the resources because Jesus is coming back. And I thought, well, this is ridiculous. You know, you're going to destroy the planet based on what turns out to be a mythological construct? You know, that's not acceptable to me. I live on this planet, too. And another thing that we always talk about the rapture, I would say, well, okay, you know, get raptured already and don't destroy the planet. I'll stay behind and live on the planet.
Let me open the door for you. Go right ahead. Get out of here. Yeah, that's true. So,
but
all right.
Sign over your will to me before you leave. How about that?
Well, and, you know, people who truly live commendable lives, predicated on the belief system from their cult club, their organization, there are a lot of them who actually do good, and we're not here to demean that goodness in people. It's just unfortunate that the controllers of these clubs, cults, and organized unions are so damned evil, and many of them are. And all you got to do is study history for 5 minutes and begin to see it. Acharya S. is with us this hour. Do visit her website. Her new book is out. We'll be back. Talk a little bit more about Zeitgeist, the phenomenally successful film, and her response to the first portion of it in a minute. Okay, and we're back with Acharya S. talking about very profound issues, as she always does. The film Zeitgeist continues to shock people and enlighten people and liberate people really around the world. What was it about that film, the three disparate parts, that was so timely and remains timely to this day?
It's pretty astounding. I hear that it's on national TV in Turkey right now.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Well, I stay away from the second and third parts because I had nothing to do with that.
Understand? Yeah.
The first part of it, and in fact, those issues actually could be used against us as Americans. So, you know, when I talk about Turkey putting on national TV, I'm not sure I'm that comfortable with those parts of it being on their television at the moment. But as far as the religion part goes. About a year before it was released, which is about 3 years ago, I got an email from someone, and it turns out to be Peter Joseph, asking me for images. And so I steered him to a certain place to find images, and then I also had someone from one of my groups provide him with images. Mm-hmm. And I didn't hear from him, and that was it. That was the only contact I really had. And then he was a stranger at the time, too. And then about a year later, I got this email saying, could you please take a look at this video that I've completed, and gave me a private access to on YouTube. And I watched just the beginning, the first part of it about the religion part, and I, of course, recognized my own work in there, as well as that of Jordan Maxwell and other people who I'd also have been doing this kind of putting out this kind of information. And I wrote this person, I said, I thought this was dynamite, really well done. And I wrote him back and said, what's your phone number? I need to tell you about a few things that I see there. So he gave me his number, I called him, and I consulted on a few things that I thought were not quite accurate and not sustainable and so forth. But by this time, that video had already gotten out. He had just shared it with a few friends, and he said, you know, it's already been seen by 60,000 people. I said, what? You just gave me the link like 3 days ago.
Yeah.
And he said, it's gone out. It's viral. It's just, it's out of control. It's amazing.
With so many documentaries out on the net now, and a lot of them are pretty good. They never get watched. This one just happened to hit, and it hit right, and it hit a nerve somehow,
amazing.
Or multiple nerves, and it just took off.
I heard this 100 million views at least by
sure.
now.
But yeah.
So there was an official version that finally came out that had some of these things removed, and anyway, that one I came to have to start defending because, of course, it got widely attacked because it deals with religion, and it, especially the part that, I mean, the George Carlin part doesn't seem to bother too many people, which I don't understand because he's really ripping, into it brilliantly, as we know. But this, the comparisons between Jesus and other characters in religion dating back to pre-Christian times, this really gets people all in a tizzy, and they try to dismiss all comparative religion by going after one thing here, one thing there. And it seems to be like the clay ankles of this whole structure, that that because this is what they glommed onto in my book too, The Christ Conspiracy, which came out 10 years ago. The comparison, the parallels.
Uh-huh.
None of the other material. That's a very small segment of my earlier work, well, of Christ Conspiracy. That was only one chapter, and then the rest of it dealt with texts that were obviously used in the creation of Christianity, the places, and whether or not the Gospels themselves have been written by the people who were claimed in the New Testament. There's much more to this subject than just that, those parallels. But this is what everybody gets hung up on, this really seems to be where that disturbs people. So, of course, there was this great movement, this backlash to negate these parallels in whatever manner possible, nitpicking, very, saying that since they're not exact duplicates, therefore there's nothing to them and things like this. And so there's a whole rash of debunking and refuting going on, a lot of articles and videos and so forth.
Right.
And so I decided to write this companion guide, which basically dealt with only a few of the parallels from Egypt, because Egypt has so much material still, so much data, so many artifacts that were destroyed in these other cultures, like, say, Greece or Roman, European. If they were even recorded at all, a lot of the literature had been destroyed, and a lot of Egypt was destroyed too, but there was so much of it, and it was buried so well, physically buried, that it was preserved. And come the discovery of the Rosetta Stone in the late 18th century and its subsequent translation around 1822 or so, then all of a sudden this whole world was opened up, and the people in the 19th century, when Egyptology exploded, were keenly aware of numerous comparisons between Christianity and the Egyptian religion. And so this is what I've mostly focused on in the last year in creating the companion guide and Christ in Egypt, which is a rather large work that deals with specifically with the Egyptian parallel.
You always do things in a rather large way. There's nothing minimalist about you.
Well, I kind of have to. You know, I have like 900 sources in this book.
Yeah, I know. All right, hold on. Be right back with Acharya. Just a couple minutes as we continue halfway through tonight's program already. Acharya S. is our guest. Has in her life received more than her share, shall we say, of threats from people who don't like what she does. But she does it very well. She does it with great integrity. And anyone with an honest, open mind who reads her material has to come away asking even more questions. And that's, I think, the purpose of a great researcher and a great journalist, which is what she really is to encourage people to go beyond that which they themselves have offered in terms of information. And so you've opened a lot of doors for people who have, again, approached them with an honest and objective reality.
Well, this is the thing is, I'm not anti-religion. I don't hate religion. I'm not trying to turn people into atheists. I have no interest in mind control. If you want to sit and contemplate Jesus or Allah or Buddha or Krishna, Yahweh, and it pleases you and makes you feel happier to be on planet Earth, that's entirely up to you. If you want to consider the concept of no God, then that's entirely up to you to do with your brain. As long as it doesn't become a pathology that needs to impose itself on everyone else. And I'm not imposing my work on it. You're welcome to come to my website or not. Now, my website, by the way, is truthbeknown.com. That's my main website. I also have stellarhousepublishing.com. So I'm not interested in mind control. But I have discovered this vast, untapped area of research and human creation and intelligence that I find to be absolutely fascinating. And it also just happens to provide answers to some of the world's great mysteries, but it also provides solutions to some of the most difficult subjects.
They are difficult, yes.
Yeah, it really does, because what you find with a lot of these religious and spiritual concepts as you trace them back in history, that they are firmly rooted in the natural world. However far out you want to extend that can go into the cosmos, into infinity, all the way through the stars.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't have to be just the trees and fire and so forth, which of course we appreciate as well. So once it's anchored into the natural world, then it starts to make a lot more sense. It starts to remove all kinds of national boundaries, gender issues. You know, we don't have God as an old man who then the woman is in a subjugated, a submitting position and so forth. You have everyone can share in the same perspective of reality, so that we're not saying we're better than you are and your culture is trash and ours is superior and so forth. That it revolves around our world, such that the world, the cosmos, the creation itself takes on a much greater significance and even a point of sacredness. And that's why I say I'm not totally anti-religion. In fact, I butt heads with people who don't like to engage in mysticism or contemplating the sacredness of the cosmos, which I enjoy doing.
And you have a tough head too.
Don't want to butt
heads
with
Aries. There you go. I knew there was that. All right, so tell us about the new book. Let's talk a little bit about that. This is a huge book.
It is. It's a huge book. And in this endeavor of trying to bring forth this information, that you know these comparisons between Horus and Jesus in Zeitgeist. They have to do with Horus being born on December 25th or the winter solstice, his mother being a virgin, having an epithet of Mary, being associated with the number 12, and so on, raising people from the dead.
Yeah, well, tell people who Horus is. A lot of people don't know.
Yeah, the Egyptian god Horus turns out to be largely a sun god, and there are a number of Horuses, but they all get rolled into one. This is the thing with mythology. Nothing is set in stone as new people come along and make observations, particularly when it has to do with the natural world. They add to the myth. The myth is changed. The myths depend on observations, what part of the world you're in, the longitude and the latitude and the time of the year. It's very mutable. And so these aren't really set in stone, but there were general paths and patterns that are followed, particularly in, let's say, the northern hemisphere. The farther north you go, the more the sun's birth in the winter time becomes important, and it becomes less so as you go towards the equator, obviously. And in fact, the sun becomes more of a pestilence towards the equator because it's so hot. And then the desert regions and so forth. So the night sky is more important to people in the desert regions. And so you find this all over the planet, and to me it's very fascinating information. Now what I've done in the new book, Christ in Egypt, is I've taken all of these comparisons of Horus, who is largely a sun god, and found them in the ancient primary sources, as well as in artifacts, such as temple alignments and images on walls, and of course the hieroglyphs themselves. And I delved into a couple thousand pages of ancient Egyptian texts, mostly translated into English, but I also learned and studied the Egyptian language and the hieroglyphs, and did some research in German and French, and of course in Greek, ancient Greek, and Latin, and Hebrew, and all of this is in there. I pulled out sources that had been censored in editions that were released to the English-speaking world, but they could be found in editions in German, for example. I've dug up all of this information, put it in this book, and it's there's like 2,400 footnotes. There are some. Hold on, just a second.
Sound like the phone rang back there or something.
So anyway, I've carefully cited this. I've got multiple translations of these ancient.
This is years of work.
Well, it's a
culmination
of decades of work.
Right.
Sure, I had to put all of my skills into this, learning all these languages dating back.
How will religious scholars take to this kind of really hammering and bludgeoning factual presentation of data that you can't dismiss? This is going to make some people who honestly look at it very uncomfortable.
Yes, well, here's the thing, too. I also took a consensus. I gathered quotes from a wide variety of Egyptologists and other individuals who are experts in relevant fields. And they make these comments kind of on the side because they're not, I guess, willing or wanting to go where I've gone and get hammered myself, you know. So they make these kind of comments, kind of dropping remarks like, a study of the relationship between this and Christianity would be worthwhile, and then they leave that and move on.
Right. All right.
So it obviously makes them uncomfortable.
Yeah, sure. All right, hold on. Be right back in just a few with Acharya S. as we continue. Acharya, talking about her really mammoth new book, which I hope gets reviewed and read by a lot of the foremost religious leaders on the planet who have at least a pretense of being objective and like to look at scholarship, because this book is loaded with scholarship. It's not just someone's opinion. It's not full of anecdotes. It's research. Now, this woman is a ferocious researcher. So Christ in Egypt, the Horus-Jesus connection is here. This doesn't, again, close the door to anyone to engage in whatever religious belief system they'd like, whether it be religious or any other belief system. But my point has always been, I think all of us have and are born with a wonderful inner voice connected to the universe and the goodness out there. And somehow, in some way, the species has devolved into a mechanism of trying to co-opt that goodness, take it, remake it, and turn it into a basic serf or slave configuration. That's very unfortunate, but that's the way the game is.